For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Irving, nothing personal word of the day. We have a Samson sit down with Dr. J. Julius Irving. The way I just said Irving is how Julius Irving was introduced at every home game when Dave Zinkoff was the public address announcer in Philadelphia. Julius, welcome to Nothing Personal.
David, good to be with you.
It is so good to see you. For people who are watching this on YouTube, you're looking at Dr. J. To me, not just one of the top 50 basketball players of all time, but he was the person who knew how to play the game in a way that had never been played before. And I want to talk all about that, but we have to start with what you're doing now, because it fascinates me, given your past in basketball. You are coaching the Tri-State team in the Big Three, and you are about to go to the playoffs. Is that right?
That is correct. I've been Tri-State's coach for four seasons. It's a matter of taking 10 weeks out of your year and leaving the other 42 to do whatever the hell you want to do and staying connected with the game. You know, Ice Cube and Clyde Drexler personally gave me the call several years ago and said, look, we need you. And I had some free time on my hands. I was still involved with the 76ers, just in terms of being a Sixer alumni and being involved contract-wise, involved with season ticket holders and sponsors, not day-to-day. So I said, this Big Three thing, could be interesting. And now it's become an Olympic sport. It's recognized worldwide. We're on CBS. So it thumbs up all around, it looks like.
So let's talk about this. First of all, the championship trophy is named after you. Is that right? I heard that.
That is correct.
And was that part of your contract?
That's our goal. No, the first few years, it wasn't named after me. I was asked in year two, could they name the trophy after me? And I said, next year, seems like, it'd be a good PR move. And I'm probably the biggest name in there, although we do have other Hall of Famers and George Gervin and Rick Barry and Lisa Leslie and Nancy Lieberman, Gary Payton. Clyde Drexler, as you know, aforementioned. So we got some big names, big basketball names in there, but Cube and Jeff asked if that was doable, and I know the NBA trophy is named after one of my heroes, Bill Russell. So I'm not gonna get my name on that trophy. So this one over here is, by the way,
you could have after you won the 83 championship with the Sixers. Yeah. And Bill Russell, obviously, I think he has 11, doesn't he, Julius?
He was the champion 11 times in 13 seasons.
Yeah, I'm still looking for the first Knicks championship since 1973 when I was only 5 years old. How do you draft players into the Big Three? Is it a draft or do you go recruit and put your team together?
We do no recruiting. There's a combine, and it's probably anywhere from 100 to 150 players who are trying to get into that combine to join the league. Each year, the two captains remain on your roster. So out of that pool of, whatever 5 times 12 is 60 players who are in the league, two on each team stay, so 24 players are set with their rosters, and now you have to go out and find the other 36.
So when you're putting together your team, are you looking for a big man and someone who can handle the ball? Are you doing things a little differently that have led to your success?
Well, you know, it depends on what you have left. So we have Jason Richardson and we have Nate Robinson as my captains. So I do need size. And, you know, I went out and we got collectively with the captains and my assistant, Steve Mix, and my other assistant, Jules Irving. You know, we went and got Larry Sanders as a center. And we got Earl Clark as a forward. And then, you know, we've split time between Tony Roden and Justin Dentman. And right now, Dentman is the fifth guy. And Roden is first up if anything happens to anybody.
How frustrated do you get coaching? Because there's something I talk about on the show, which is Hall of Fame players don't always make good coaches because they have a hard time understanding why other players don't see the court the way they do and can't do the things the way they did. And obviously, given who you are, how frustrated do you get?
I only get frustrated when somebody's not listening. And, you know, we have one or two guys on our team who like to fight more so than play. And they like to fight the referees. So I'm constantly sending Steve Mix over to, all right, you go get him and calm him down and have him stop yelling at the referees, the fans, or whatever, and concentrate on the game. Because I think our team has really peaked right now from day one, in which we were, you know, better than average, and now we're the best team in the league. We're the hot team going into the playoffs. So I'd be very disappointed if we didn't win that trophy with my name on it.
I can't wait for you to give the trophy to yourself. You mentioned Steve Mix. Is that your former Sixers teammate who may have worn number 50, big power forward?
That's my boy right there. You know, we roomed together when I was with the Sixers. So, you know, we became lifelong friends. And, you know, we celebrate one another's birthdays and the births and the grandkids and just about everything. So when I took this position, he was the first guy I called. He responded. And he's been with me since day one. We just added my son, who's a Cal Berkeley graduate and played basketball there for 2.5 seasons, I believe, maybe 3. And so he's the second assistant coach. And we just have a good time over there. You know, the games go so fast. I mean, we're playing 25 points is halftime and 50 points is game time. So you're in and out in less than an hour. And, you know, when the team's ready to go, we're really good. And when we're not, you know, we dropped a couple of games. But, you know, the two top teams in the league are both 6-2 in 8 games. And we're one of those. And now it's playoff time.
I was just going to say, you get to go to the Atlantis and you have a broadcast deal, the Big Three. You can watch it on CBS. You can watch it on Paramount. There's all sorts of different ways to watch Julius Irving win his own trophy. You mentioned Steve Mix. I want to talk about the 83 team for 1 second. If you are a basketball fan, you know about the 1983 Philadelphia 76ers who have been trusting the process ever since. Who on that team would you not have roomed with?
Well, Steve and Bobby Jones were roommates at one time. And when Steve became my roommate, he said, you know, Bobby's the nicest guy, except he's tremendous on defense and he's a Hall of Famer. But he's a terrible roommate. You know, go to bed at 8 o'clock, can't keep the TV on. And the room temperature, you know, has to be the temperature that he likes. And whatever. So I said, yeah, that could be a problem, especially the 8 o'clock rule.
When you're putting teams together, Julius, first of all, people don't even realize that back in those days, professional athletes were flying commercially. Yeah. They were living with teammates in hotel rooms, a 2-double-bedroom on the road and walking through airports and train stations. That's how it was back in the day.
Oh, that was the good old days. You know, I mean, it kept your humility intact. And I think, you know, you felt honored to be a professional athlete and not privileged. And, you know, because there were just some things that you just had to suck it up and go do. And we depended a lot on our trainers and our equipment managers and what have you to move, you know, the franchise to city to city. And, you know, you always had to catch the first flight out the next morning or whatever. So we didn't have a lot of the conveniences they have today, but that's okay. I think it's made some of the players a little softer, you know, than the 70s, 80s or the 60s and 50s players. But, you know, there's fan appreciation for the softness and the finesse, and it is what it is.
Do you have issues when you're looking at the current day Sixers? And obviously they have gone through a process. They have not won another title, but I'm thinking back to your 83 team and the way it was made up, you know, with Maurice Cheeks and you and Bobby Jones and World Free and back in those days.
Tony and Moses Malone. Of course, you can't forget Big Mo.
No, not in that front court. So when you look at today's NBA, what frustrates you the most about the game today and today's players?
Well, I think the Sixers, you know, have been a source of frustration in playing Atlanta this year. I think they were the favorite team, and Atlanta just like surprised us. And you know, a couple of years ago, seventh game against Toronto, and Kawhi hits the shot. Yeah, there's a little degree of luck that you got to have to get to the finals. And then, you know, there's some luck even involved in the finals where usually the best team wins, not the lucky team. But getting there and going through that process to get there with all those playoff rounds and, the number of games that you have to win, 4, 8, 12, I guess, before you get to the fourth round, which is the finals. And to beat a team four times is no small feat. You got to have focus. You have to have concentration. You have to have things going your way. And, you know, forget about the referees. They don't decide the outcome of the game. The players decide the outcome of the game. So it's been a long drought in Philadelphia. I think our fans are eagerly waiting for the team to get over the top. There's a lot of controversy this year with the Ben Simmons situation or whatever, but it seems like the team is staying Pat with their big three being Joel and Ben and Terrell, Tobias Harris. And if they can, you know, add pieces and get another year in with Doc Rivers, because, you know, last year was his first year on the job with the Sixers. You know, sometimes you need time with people to really know how to bring out the best in them. And I see it with my team in the big three, you know, just from game one to game eight or whatever, you know, the guys in the locker room, and they like each other. They like playing together. And you know, I feel like, you know, I might be a factor in that, but I'm not the main factor. The main factor is, you know, the captains and the crew saying, this is something we want to do. And this is something that we're doing. And we want to make a sacrifice to, you know, be all for one and one for all.
Who do you coach like? For all the coaches you've had over your career, you probably took a little bit from everyone, but when you're on the sidelines and you're noticing yourself coaching, do you think of some of your previous coaches?
I do. I had Al Bianchi as my first coach, and Al had me and Charlie Scott in the first season. The second season, he had me and George Gervin and whatever. And he was, you know, I mean, George and I, you know, and Charlie as well, we had scored 30 points, 40 points, 50 points, no egos involved. And, you know, I had a 63 point game, you know, in the ABA. And the coach was like, right there, I'm not taking you out of the game. You know, you're a hot player. So, you know, you got to get us these points. My career in the NBA was a little bit different with Gene Shue and Billy Cunningham and Matt Gukas or whatever. It was more, you know, I mean, the Brown Ball League had its style, and the ABA had its style. The ABA was wide open, footloose and fancy free. And you know, so my stats, which was 12,000 points in the ABA in 5 years, and then 18,000 points in 11 years in the NBA, it came to 30,000. But, you know, the leagues were very different for me, and the coaches were very different. So I think my coaching style is more like Bianchi's and Lockery's. You know, those were the first two coaches that I had. And it's probably where you know, I got to establish myself as one of the world's best players, and multiple time MVP, scoring titles, and all that stuff. And, you know, it was just a freedom there that I don't think I had in the NBA. And I saw that it was not the league. It was probably how we were managed. And that is what it is.
Did you realize, for people listening or watching, Julius Erving was really the superstar in the ABA, which was almost a competitor league that then merged into the NBA, and Julius became the face of the merger, if I could call you that, right to your face, that you were the most famous and best player who got merged into the NBA. Were you aware during those times the way you were being used as a player to make the merger more palatable?
Yes. I never separated myself from, you know, George Gervin and David Thompson, Dan Issel and George McGinnis and Artis Gilmore and the other great ABA players who are also in the Hall of Fame. Bobby Jones was there too. So the ultimate goal is, you know, win a championship, win multiple championships if you can. If you're the leading scorer and you're the dominant player, you probably win some scoring titles. Big scorers aren't always the team that wins the championship doesn't always have a leading scorer. You know, many times and probably most times they don't. So it is a team game. It's a team sport. And you know, my approach to it was always team first and my individuals stuff second to that. And that's what I believe. And I think that's what I believe too. It takes to win. You have to have somebody who is willing to make a sacrifice, and maybe they're better than all the other players on the team, but they got to give up something in order to bring the other guys up and bring the team up. And that was the case with, you know, Bill Russell, the aforementioned Bill Russell with the 11 championships in 13 years. You know, I don't think in any of those years he was the leading scorer on their team, but he was the dominant force and show people how to play basketball the right way, which is why he became one of my heroes and one of my idols. And I tried to be a hero and an idol to many who came behind me. And that has happened. And I get a lot of feedback. I get a tremendous amount of feedback at this age when I can no longer run and jump the way that I used to. But, you know, I can stroll in a room and, you know, there's going to be a reaction to my presence there. That makes me feel good.
So I need to act like a fan for one second, even though I'm now the host of a podcast and work at CBS, because I have arguments with people very often about previous eras and current eras and who's the greatest, who's not the greatest. And I just tell people to go on YouTube and watch the video of your layup. And I'm going to say the name wrong because this is for memory. I want to say it was Mark Landisberg. Do I have that name potentially right?
You botched that one.
Okay. What?
Mark Landsberger.
Landsberger. Okay. I did botch that one, Julius.
And then there was Abdul-Jabbar under the basket.
So Julius Erving, if you're not watching, please do, has some of the biggest hands, and big hands matter in basketball because you can hold the ball. Look at those hands if you're on YouTube. And it's like in baseball, there's a little pitcher. He's 5'10" named Pedro Martinez. I don't know if you know who that is, Julius. He's got very, very big hands and long fingers, and enables him to manipulate the ball. And you would hold the ball long before James Worthy did this. You would hold the ball like basically a tennis ball. And the way you were able to manipulate it made you, in my opinion, one of the greatest, the ability to get to the hole. And that's what basketball used to be about, the way you were able to create. And I just want to know, when you made that play with Landisberger, do you have it in your head what you're doing, or is it all instinct?
It's instinct, and most of the times when you make a move like that, you've probably done it before, just not on the same stage. And maybe there's a tweak here, there's a twist there. It's just like when Michael Jordan copied my dunk from the foul line, you know, he did something with his legs that I didn't do because my legs were kind of straight and floating, and he kind of expanded his legs, and it just gave it another dimension, you know, which was great. And you always want to see, you know, somebody chasing the bar if it's high, and then passing the bar if it's really high, and you know, creating a new move. So that particular move, which was, you know, I just kind of called it a reverse layup. I've done many reverse layups, but, you know, the hang time, leaving from the left side, the right side of the lane, and floating under the basket, holding, extending my arm and holding the ball out there, like I was going to pass it to the opposite corner, and freezing their center, Kareem. He came over with his hands up and he froze. And I just kind of instinctively brought the ball inside of his hands and laid it up and made the reverse layup. And then by then I was coming down to the ground and I fell. I'd exhausted my leap at that time and just got up and ran down the court like it was just another little stroll in the park.
So Julius, I saw that live.
If ever. You saw it live.
I saw it when it happened. And it's just, thank you for letting me ask that. But I want to get back to the big three because you're now a coach. Remember, mm-hmm. the trophy's named after you. You're very loyal to Nate Robinson, former Nick, by the way, who's basically around my size and unbelievable player. If you had to put together from your ABA years, your NBA years, and your big three years, with all respect to your current guys, who are your big three on a big three team to win a title? Who do you want?
Give me Moses Malone, right? And I'm on the team.
Do you want to be on the team?
Yeah, I'm going to be on the team. You know, play, because I grew up playing 1-on-1, 2-on-2, 3-on-3. So I know it very well, because every basketball player, who good or average or what have you, played 1-on-1, 2-on-2, 3-on-3 basketball, because it wasn't always 10 guys around to play, and you didn't always have access to a full court. So most of the time you played half court. So I would take Big Mo. Now I know I have my rim protector and I have my inside presence. My three-point guy, probably Andrew Toney. You know, Andrew, first day of camp, you know, he stopped out there and shot a four-pointer. And then Billy Cunningham started yelling at him. And he said, "Coach, I can shoot that shot." And, you know, this is something that, you know, Andrew should be a Hall of Famer, even with a shortened career. You know, he's kind of like Gale Sayers, you know, 6 years, and still what he did in the 6 years was phenomenal, and injuries kept him from having a 10 or 15-year career or whatever. But Andrew, he would be the deadliest force from the three-point line and the four-point shot or whatever, because he has no conscience. He can miss six in a row and still take the next one. And so he would be on my team. I take Big Mo. I take Andrew. I probably would go with Cheeks. You know, and that's a battle between Cheeks, Brian Taylor, and John Williamson. Because John would be killing guys in the big three too. But I need another big man. So who am I going with? God, I had Daryl Dawkins, had Caldwell Jones, Jimmy Akins. After Big Mo, you got to help me with this.
Well, listen, if you're putting
who do you think should be my other man? Yeah, maybe Charles Barkley, do you think?
So it depends which Charles Barkley. If you're getting the TNT Charles Barkley, he's not going to help you. If you're getting the Barkley who, when he's playing with you, is listening to you, then you take him.
When I went to the finals, I mean, let's say if I get Charles Barkley, I don't need John Williamson anymore. And I got the option of taking George Gervin too. So to leave him off that team, you know, probably because of Tony and Cheeks, Barkley, Moses Malone, Julius Erving. Five guys, big three team, we'll take on anybody.
Do you ever think to yourself what your 83 team could do against the current teams, like even the Bulls teams with Jordan or the Warriors teams or the LeBron-led teams? Because people have a hard time comparing, but I don't. And I think that the way you played was far more disciplined, and you'd be able to beat those teams 4 to 7 times.
Yeah, it's come up multiple times. I think I was very pleased to hear UB Brown say that that 83 team was the best team that he had ever seen, both ways, offensively and defensively. And, you know, I mean, UB Brown is a basketball expert. I mean, you know, if there's a guy with an opinion that should be heard and listened to, it's UB Brown. So that made me feel good. You know, I know that lots of times, you know, I could see these lists and pick the top 10 NBA teams of all time, and my Sixers team is not on there. You know, obviously our Nets teams in 74 and 76 with the ABA probably didn't qualify, but I'm looking around and I'm saying, nah, that's not right. And will they ever get it right? I guess it depends on who they are, you know? So, but I love you, David, for what you had to say about that team, and that team could handle its business in any era. And it's perfectly in sync with how I think about it.
So Red Halsman and I spoke about your team very often. And I wanted to just tell you something that Red used to say about your team. Red Halsman, former coach of the Knicks, two-time world champion with the Knicks. And we would talk about the team and what he would note to me, because I studied the game, because I learned that I wouldn't be able to play it when I stopped growing. And he said, pay attention to the purposeful movement of all five guys on the court every second of the game. Mm-hmm. Because you weren't standing around watching your teammates. You all were doing something every moment. And Red always talked about that. And did that come from your coach? Did that come from the basketball IQ that you all had? Tell me where that comes from.
Well, I think Billy Cunningham was great in that respect. And we had Billy Cunningham and Chuck Daly. So now we have two Hall of Fame coaches. And Chuck was the X and O guy. And Billy was the big time motivational factor. And, this, you know, you got to play hard. You got to always give 110% and don't stand around, you know. So the combination of those two guys, you know, made it what it was. And, we even in transition, we ran a fast break that was different than Showtime or whatever, because it was structured, and it was a structured fast break, which fed into our offensive set. If the fast break didn't produce a layup or a wide open shot, then we ran right into our offensive sets, which, you know, were decided by the matchups, and whoever had the weaker matchup, that's who we would go to. And we'd automatically do that, and we'd milk it until they stopped it.
I just think about today's game and say to myself that people don't watch the old NBA enough to understand the discipline, to understand the fundamentals that some guys don't have. But I want to switch gears before you have to leave us and get to your practice. In before you go to the Bahamas, tell me about Dr. J, because I grew up just calling you the doctor. Mm-hmm. And I do you have an MD?
I have honorary doctorate degrees from Temple University, University of Massachusetts, and Springfield College. And they're honorary. I have a bachelor's degree from the University of Massachusetts. And I was called the doctor and long before college. This was in middle school. My buddy was the professor and I was the doctor. His name is Leon Saunders. And we gave each other nicknames. As my nickname grew and spread with my, you know, rise in popularity as a basketball player, I got to the ABA and suddenly I became Dr. J, because the team physician was Dr. M. And then another guy in the organization was Dr. something else or whatever. So we just couldn't call out the name Doc and not have two or three heads turn wondering who you're talking to, which Doc. So Chopper Travellini said, you got to be Dr. J. He was our trainer. And then we started getting promoted. Charlie the Great Scott and and Julius Dr. J. Irving. And then the next year was George Iceman Gervin. And, you know, the ABAO was fun. You know, we always had nicknames and sayings and expressions. And like I said before, it was one for all and it was all for one. So if I was going to ever reflect back on my best basketball days, which I enjoyed the most, it would be the ABA days in terms of the big accomplishment, being MVP in the NBA in 1981 and being a champion in 1983.
That is amazing that you look back that way with the ABA, because I think people, when they look back and watch some of those games, the talent, you mentioned George Iceman Gervin, you said Dan Issel, Bobby Thompson, that's a name that doesn't... I was thinking Bobby Jones. Thompson with the Nuggets. Wasn't he on the Nuggets with Doug Moe and they would score about 170 points a game when Moe was coaching them?
They were a high scoring team for sure. And we played that team in the last ABA championship. And we had played them, I'd say, 9 times during the season for whatever reason. And they were Western Conference team and they had beaten us 7 out of 9. And then we played them for the championship. We were scared to death. And then I went into Denver and the first 2 games, you know, I got the green light from Kevin Lockery. And I had rested very well the last 2 weeks of the season, playing just the first quarter and not playing the rest of the game. And I opened those 2 games with 48 points in the first game and 45 in the second game. And we split. Like I said, the high scorer is always on the winning team. And we got the split. And they, you know, it ended up being a 6-game series, winning in Nassau Coliseum against them, and you know, that was a crowning victory, and it was the last hurrah of the NBA.
Well, you are a legend, Julius.
Thank you.
I just would like to get everyone to watch the Big Three. The playoffs are starting Saturday. They're starting tomorrow, and it's in the Atlantis in the Bahamas, and Julius Irving coaches the Tri-City team, and they are favored. This is the word I'm getting from CBS, favored to win it, so Dr. J can get given his own trophy to himself. Julius Irving, thank you for being on Nothing Personal, and we wish you a ton of luck down in the Bahamas.
Thank you, David. You take care.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.